Good morning, everyone. I'm pleased to present this phase 3 data of ravulizumab or ALXN1210 compared to eculizumab in patients with paroxysmal nocturnal hemoglobinuria currently treated with eculizumab. And in particular, this is going to be a subgroup analysis based upon the transfusion history and few other demographics of this population group. I'm pleased to present this on behalf of all my colleagues, co-authors, and patients, and also the sponsor of this study as well. So as you know, ravulizumab is the new long-acting complement inhibitor, which has got a significantly high affinity for complement component C5 and has got a prolonged half-life compared to eculizumab, which is the current standard of care treatment for patients with PNH. So we know that there has been some data on the patient experience with eculizumab in the ability to sort of see the risk-benefit profile across different population groups with disease characteristics. But we wanted to use this study data to assess whether ravulizumab, which, as I've just mentioned, is a long-acting complement inhibitor, is able to show similar benefits across the primary and secondary endpoints across different patient subgroups based on their demographics and disease characteristics. So the objectives of this subgroup analysis is to evaluate the safety and efficacy of ravulizumab and eculizumab in patients with PNH who've been stable on eculizumab prior to them coming onto the trial, and trying to look at them based on their transfusion history, i.e., the number of transfusions they've received in 12 months prior to day one, and also the other demographic characteristics, i.e., sex, age, race, and geographical region of where they live. Just to recap you on the study design, as you know, this is a multi-center, randomized, open-label study while in patients on eculizumab who had been stable over a period of time. So they came into the study entry, and they were either randomized to continue their standard of care, i.e. eculizumab given at 900 milligram at 2 weekly intervals, or they were randomized to go on to ravulizumab. And these were patients, adult patients with PNH over the age of 18 with a confirmed diagnosis of PNH by flow cytometry. And other important point is the patients should have been had a stable LDH defined as less than 1.5 times the upper limit of normal. So the primary endpoint of this study was a percentage change from baseline to day 183 in the LDH parameter. And as we know, this is a clinically important endpoint for patients with PNH. But not only were there just one primary endpoint, there were four key secondary endpoints as illustrated in the slide, illustrated looking at the proportion of patients with breakthrough during the 6 months time period, along with changes in the facet fatigue score, transfusion avoidance, and also looking at the proportion of patients with hemoglobin stabilization. And as I mentioned before in the previous few minutes, showing that we wanted to look at all those primary and secondary endpoints in the context of subgroups within this group of patients, and the subgroups analyzed or looking at their transfusion history before coming into the trial over the period of the 1 year prior to coming into the trial, gender, age at the time of first study exposure, dividing into less than 65, more than 65, and whether they belong to different races and geographical regions as well. So some of the statistical methods used as in the primary endpoint in this study was to look at the non-inferiority of the ravulizumab, i.e. the long-acting complement inhibitor, compared to eculizumab. And this was considered non-inferior if the lower bound of confidence interval, i.e. the 95% confidence interval for the difference, was greater than the non-inferiority margin, which was defined as 15%, i.e. minus 15%. And for all the subgroup analysis, each of those characteristics were using descriptive statistics based on whether on their demographics or transfusion history. Obviously, since it's a subgroup analysis, this study was not powered for formal comparative statistical analysis between the subgroups as we would do if this was predefined as per the trial. And if you look at the results, initial results looking at the primary efficacy endpoint, i.e. the percentage change in the from baseline in the LDH, i.e. the first primary endpoint, and this is a forest plot, as you're familiar with, looking at the point estimates, and they are shown as blue box with a confidence interval by the blue lines around it. And although the percentage change from baseline in LDH numerically favored ravulizumab across all the subgroups, it was found to be non-inferior, and none of the subgroups in both the treatment groups appeared to influence the percentage change from the baseline in the LDH as well. Again, showing that there was a numerical advantage in ravulizumab, but did not hold up statistically in the subgroup analysis across all the parameters. And when you now look at the other four key secondary endpoints, and if I try to take you through to one each one of them, and the breakthrough hemolysis was the first secondary endpoint, but although in some ways in a good way, because there were not much breakthrough events in the context of ravulizumab, obviously no sensitive subgroups appeared to drive the occurrence of these breakthrough events, but obviously numerically there was a favorability towards ravulizumab, but did not reach statistical significance. Then if you go on to the secondary endpoint, efficacy endpoint in relation to the subgroup analysis, this was looking at the facet fatigue scores as well, and again although the change from baseline was slightly favoring ravulizumab across the subgroups, there was no particular sensitivity observed for any of the subgroups studied as well. And if you go on to the other secondary endpoint of transfusion avoidance, and similarly to the other two secondary endpoints, there was a numerical benefit with ravulizumab, i.e. favorably, in most of the subgroups or in all of the subgroups, but no sensitive subgroups appeared to have to drive this particular occurrence of transfusion avoidance in this. And then to look at the proportion of patients with stabilization of hemoglobin, which was the fourth secondary endpoint. As you can see, there was no difference between ravulizumab and eculizumab in the ability to stabilize your hemoglobin based upon if you're transfusion dependent or based upon any of the demographic characteristics studied across this subgroup. So in conclusions, although the caveat is this is a subgroup analysis of a very large phase three randomized open label study, we were not able to find any sensitive subgroups which within the ones we studied, i.e. the transfusion history or the demographics, which seemed to drive any particular benefit for any of the primary endpoints or all the four secondary key endpoints we studied, including facet fatigue, breakthrough hemolysis, transfusion avoidance, and hemoglobin stabilization. And one way of looking at it is, again, showing that these findings sort of quite reinforces and confirms that the ability of this randomized study to hold true in the primary results across different subgroups of patients which were included in the study, i.e. saying that as this drug is now being approved in a number of countries, that physicians could safely use this drug in comparison to eculizumab without worrying about any deleterious effects across any subgroups which has been included in this subgroup analysis. And with that, I would like to say once again a thank you to all the patients, the investigators, sub-investigators, co-investigators, study participants, the sponsors, and everybody involved in this large phase 3 randomized study. And thank you for everyone who's helped to analyze this subgroups as well. And happy to answer any questions from the team on for this poster. Thank you.